Foul Play, a murder game played by people whose business is murder. And here to see Foul Play is your chairman, Simon Brett.
Hello, and welcome to a programme of devious whodunitry. Within the next half hour, we will not only have a murder, but also guarantee to find out its perpetrator. To help follow the clues and finger the criminals, I'm delighted to welcome this week's guest investigators, both of whom are internationally acclaimed crime writers. Lindsay Davis is the creator of Falco, a private eye who's brought the methods of Philip Marlowe to the mean streets of ancient Rome. Lindsay, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
I'm not sure whether I can promise any togas tonight, but...
Just as well. I hate all those bare knees on men.
Really? Yes. The odd sandal, possibly. Lindsay's partner in crime, or perhaps detection, is Val McDermid. Val's a former journalist, so she's got the perfect background to be an investigator. She's the author of the Kate Branigan Private Eye series and has won the Crime Writers Association top award, the Gold Dagger. Are you ready for the fray, Val?
Absolutely. I have my dagger at the ready.
Excellent.
Don't turn your back, Simon.
I certainly won't. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest investigators... But what are they going to investigate? We need a murder, we need a murderer, we need suspects, we need witnesses, we need a huge supporting cast. Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome Foul Play's huge supporting cast of two, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. Right, let the mayhem commence as I ask Lee to read the opening of this week's mystery, Death at the Dig.
The tomb of Egfrith of Woldsby had lain undisturbed since the Earl's death in battle in 584 AD. But more than 1,400 years later, it had been opened to the elements. The discovery of the tomb in the Kentish village of Studdingham had caused great excitement in the world of archaeology, and the site was now a chain-fenced compound. A small village of tents and porter cabins had grown up around the excavation. The burial chamber itself, except for a little dust and earth, looked exactly as it had done in 584 AD. The only detail which struck a discordant note was the body that lay inside it. A body from 584 AD wouldn't have been wearing a denim shirt and baggy khaki shorts. It might possibly, like this body, have been clutching in its hand a dusty, jewelled cross. But there was no way its yellowed teeth would be clenching in the rictus of death the stem of a much-chewed tobacco pipe. And the instrument which might have stoved in the skull of a body in 584 AD would not, like the one that lay bloodied in the trench beside its victim, have been a furled beach umbrella advertising a well-known soft drink.
Thank you, Lee. So clearly what we're up against here is an archaeological mystery. Val and Lindsay, what do you reckon? I'm not actually asking you for a full solution at this stage, but any thoughts so far?
I'm fascinated by the yellowed teeth.
You are?
Are yes. They real or false?
Well, exactly. This is the kind of question that an investigator would ask, and to which I hope I will have an answer. Val?
I'm concerned about this beach umbrella. I mean, we've all heard about coastal erosion.
Yes.
Should we be worrying if perhaps the sea is going to sweep in and sweep all this away before we've reached a solution?
Well, I'm very glad you raised that point. And, you know, when it happens, you will be the first to know about it. But to get a little more information, we will now join a press conference being held by the officer in charge of the murder investigation, Inspector Sergeant.
Ladies and gentlemen of the press, the victim has been identified as 58-year-old Professor Harold Sturton, an eminent archaeologist who was in charge of the excavation project at Studdingham. He was killed by a series of blows to the head, delivered by a furled umbrella, and the time of death was probably around 1 o'clock this morning. His body was discovered at 8 o'clock this morning by Tara Brinkley French, one of the volunteer helpers at the site. She reported the death to two senior archaeologists on the site, Dr. Valerie Morgan and Dr. Kevin Malpass. Dr. Morgan called the police. The umbrella, incidentally, was one of many which the archaeologists have been using to protect themselves from the sun while they're digging. Most of the people on the site are also living there in tents. The tent area is separated from the excavation by some porter cabins, in which the archaeologists' equipment is kept. The jewelled cross Professor Sturton was holding is of Anglo-Saxon origin and believed to be of considerable value.
Thank you very much, Inspector Sergeant. Val and Lindsay, does that information help at all?
I'm a little worried about an Anglo-Saxon cross from 584 AD.
You are?
Mm.
Why is that?
Well, I think those dates don't quite add up. Some funny business obviously went on at the tomb of Egfrith of Wolesby back in the distant past, which I suspect may have an impact on the present-day murder.
You think so? What we're going to do now is have more information. We're going to hear statements from some of the people who've been working at the Studdingham Dig, and first from Dr. Valerie Morgan, research assistant to the late Professor Sturton. Dr. Morgan, over to you.
Thank you. Well, yes, in one way I have to say I can't feel sorry that Harold Sturton's dead, you know, because at least now he doesn't have to face the knowledge that his life's work is in ruins. I mean, it's always been in ruins, of course. I don't mean to make that joke, but now, you see, it's in tatters as well, because Professor Sturton was my supervisor for my doctoral thesis at Oxford, and afterwards he asked me to help him with his research. What? Good heavens, no. It was never anything other than a professional relationship. Harold was absolutely married to his work. His special period was 6th century Kent, and probably his most famous publication was Egfrith of Wolesby, the last pagan earl. Have you read it? No, I don't suppose you would have done. Well, so obviously the discovery of a cross in Egfrith's grave would have been a terrible blow to Harold. I mean, it would have delighted Dr. Malpass, who's working with us here at the moment in Studdingham. You see, he's been arguing for years that Egfrith was one of this country's first Christian noblemen. He'll be even more insufferable now. Now, I don't really have a lot of respect for Dr. Malpass. He's a very arrogant man, and he's a terrible philanderer. I don't approve, really. I don't know which of the girls on the dig he's been making up to. There's so many of them, frankly. I mean, they all look the same to me. They're dressed far too revealingly in shorts and T-shirts, flaunting themselves at the men, you know, and they stay up far too late drinking vodka and playing, you know, loud music. Last night, well, I did have a quick check around the site at about midnight. The rest of the night, I was asleep in my tent. Yeah. What do you mean, can someone confirm that? I have a tent to myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan. Now, of course, we don't know whether the people making these statements are telling the truth or lying, but our guest investigators now have an opportunity to cross-examine the first witness. I should point out, however, that I am here acting as solicitor to the witnesses, and I will intervene at the first signs of the guest investigators bullying, asking improper questions, or getting too near the solution too early. Lindsay, is there something you would like to ask Dr. Morgan?
How long exactly have you been working with Professor Sturton?
I've been working with him now for 20 years.
20 years. Oh, that's a very long time, isn't it? I do know what you mean about girly archaeologists.
You know, the problem is there's just not enough money, you know, to get funding, to get proper workers, so we have these little flibbity-jibs that come down. I shouldn't say that, but you know what I mean.
Groupies of Dr. Malpass, I gather. Forgive me, but had Dr. Malpass ever made advances to you?
Dr. Malpass?
Yes, you said he was a bit
no,
of a philanderer.
No, he's Australian. I don't trust him, frankly. I think a lot of his methods leave a lot to be desired, you know? One of the first rules on digs is that you just leave things as they are until the team comes. But not Malpass, no. He wants to claim victory all the time for himself. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think I do, yes.
Right, Val.
You said that finding a cross would have been a terrible blow to Harold. Well, something certainly was a terrible blow to Harold. When you were doing the rounds at midnight, as you put it, what exactly were you looking for? Were you looking in the tents, perhaps, to see if any philandering were going on?
Well, certainly with those girls. I mean, I don't go anywhere near their bloody tents because there's always some skullduggery happening. A lot of the local boys from the village of Studdingham, they're like dogs on heat. They sniff those girls out and they come rushing around outside the dig.
You seem strangely obsessed with these girls, if I may say so.
Well, I'm not, no, of course I'm not obsessed with them, but I just don't think that they're right to be on this dig. You know, I just think that, frankly, they'd be much better off in Stringfellows or some other club like that.
But did you actually see, did you approach the dig itself on your midnight stroll?
No, I just walked around the tents and had a little bit of a walk, you know.
I thought you said you hadn't been walking around the tents.
Well, no, I mean, the tents are one side of the dig. The porter cabin is the other side. Have you been down to the site, do you know?
No, I haven't. No, well, I'm trapped in this radio studio.
Let me explain. The tents are one side of the dig, the porter cabin, and then there's the dig. So there's quite a lot to separate it all.
The chain link fence that's around it, was that secured in some way? Would it be at night?
It has been secured, but because they go down to the pub, you know, Malpass goes down to the pub, the Queen's Pajamas or whatever the pub is called in studying. Of course, they have keys, and sometimes when they've had one too many ciders, you know, they don't lock it up properly.
I'm just a bit worried about Professor Sturton being there himself, actually. I think we were told that he was killed at about 1 o'clock. Why was he there?
If I knew that, I'd be a policeman, not an archaeologist,
you know. It wasn't his habit to stroll down and look at his work in the dark.
No, I've never known him to do that before.
Thank you.
Ever.
Thank you very much. We now move on to our next statement, which comes from another professional archaeologist at the dig, Dr. Kevin Malpass.
Right, I won't pretend to like Professor Sturton. Apart from his personal unpleasantness, that dreadful poet, I think smoking's a disgusting habit. I also thought that professionally he was old-fashioned, inefficient and misguided. He was a control freak. For instance, yesterday afternoon, when finally, after all these months, we got into the burial chamber, what did he do? Well, he suspended work for the day. I think he was simply afraid of what he was going to find in there, and he was right to be afraid. His whole theory about Ecgfrith of Walesby would be shot to pieces. By discovering that cross, Professor Sturton was digging his own grave. Yeah, rather an apt expression in the circumstances. Well, if you want my theory, the reason he went back to the dig last night was to do a bit of private excavation. I reckon he'd seen the cross in the afternoon, and he was trying to remove it from the grave. Yeah, but then Professor Sturton would resort to anything to prop up his ailing career. What did I do yesterday evening? And I went out for a drink in the village pub with some of the younger helpers. Well, then I had an early night. But, nah, I'm sorry. I regard inquiries about my private life as an unwarrantable intrusion. If you want me, I'll be in my tent working on my laptop.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Malpass. If we could just keep you from your laptop for a couple of moments. Val and Lindsay, you have 2 minutes to cross-examine Dr. Malpass.
Why, Dr. Malpass, are you here if you had such a low opinion both of Dr. Sturton's views and his methods?
Well, basically, I had a feeling in me water that something's going to turn up on this dig, and it turned out to be right. My theory about Ecgfrith of Walesby being the first Christian nobleman in Britain, I thought this digger's going to be the one that's going to turn out, so I put a lot of pressure on to be here with him. I didn't want him covering up any of the evidence. I know what he's like, that Sturton. He was heading down. He's about as much use as a koala in a kung fu fight, and I wasn't going to have him hiding any of the evidence from me, let me tell you.
What time did you come back from the pub?
I must have got back about 11:30, I suppose.
You said you had an early night. We've caught you out in a lie here, as well as libelling the professor. You're not a very nice man, are you?
I mean, I'm not a very nice... I'm an Australian!
I think people have different views of what is an early night, too. You know, but for some people, half past 11 is absolutely normal. Yes. Do you have another question for Dr. Malpass at this point?
I don't think so, but can we reserve the right to call him
back? You will have an opportunity to speak
to him.
It'll
be a delight to come and talk to you, ladies, let me tell you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Malpass. We will now move on to our third statement, which was given to the police by the volunteer helper who actually found the body, Tara Brinkley French.
Hello. Oh, gosh, you know, I'm not an archaeologist, no. Just, you know, I've got some chums who are really into that kind of stuff, and they said you could have a great time on dig, you know, so you sort of riffle through a pile of dirt all day. But in the evenings, you know, you're staying in tents, and, well, it's just like party, party, party. Now, I don't get paid, but then, you know, Daddy gives me a good allowance. He's awfully keen on my being here, you know, because it gives me something to do, really. I'm not in Harvey Nichols. Well, you know, Daddy's into antiques. Yes, got a great collection of Saxon stuff. I don't know the details, but apparently it's really valuable. Professor Sturton. Stuttery Sturton. No, I didn't have a lot to do with him, really. He's a bit of a dry old stick, you know. No, I shouldn't really laugh, because it's ghastly bad luck, him being killed, you know. And, of course, me finding the body. It was absolutely spooky, really. Dr. Malpass, much more fun. Finding this crossing is really good, isn't it? I mean, it proves... Oh, I don't know what it proves exactly, but I know that it's jolly good news for Kevin. Yes, I was around the dig yesterday evening, sort of about midnight-ish, you know. Girls and I share a tent, and we'd been hitting the vodka quite hard, and they were all out cold, but I couldn't sleep. It was a really hot night, and I just went out for a quick ciggy, you know. Did I see anyone? Have you talked to any of the other people on the dig yet? Oh. Well, no, I did see Dr. Malpass. He was just, I think he was having a cigarette. Must have been like me. We just sort of said goodnight, and I went back into my tent, and then the rest of the night I slept like the proverbial top.
Thank you very much, Miss Brinkley French. There it is, our third statement. Guest investigators, I'm sure you have the odd question to put to Tara Brinkley French.
Tell me about last night. Did you go to the pub?
Yes.
And what time did you come
Brilliant
back?
Brilliant night.
Was it really? That's nice.
Fantastic pub, yeah.
And what time, really what cool. time did you leave?
Closing time, we left. Mm.
And you got back about half past, say?
Half past what?
Half past 11.
Is that what time they close? Really? Fantastic. No wonder I was so drunk.
And then about midnight, you were having a ciggy.
Yeah, I did go to bed and I couldn't sleep and went out to the tent and had my ciggy.
And you saw Dr. Malpass?
Yeah.
I feel you may have seen more of him than perhaps you're revealing to us.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, I don't like your tone. And I think we should move on to a question from Val. Val, do you have anything polite to ask the witness?
You seem to be very friendly with Dr. Malpass. You get on well.
He's tremendous fun. All the girls love him.
Has he been to your home, your parents' home with you? Have you visited your
good
parents?
Good Lord, no, he's Australian. Daddy wouldn't like that.
Your father has a collection of Saxon antiquities. Have you brought any of those from home to show Dr. Malpass, given his interest in the period?
I don't know anything about my daddy's work at all.
I am intrigued. I would like to return to what Lindsay was asking about. You had a cigarette and Dr. Malpass had a cigarette. Now, traditionally, cigarettes are indulged by people of the opposite sex after certain activities. I wondered if you had had the
After dinner, you mean? After dinner, yes.
After dinner and after other things
really?
Of a more intimate
lunch?
Nature.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes we have cigarettes after we've finished the day's dig, you know, is that what you mean?
No. No, I was thinking of something that involved rather fewer clothes than the dig.
I just have to tell you, my dad is coming down shortly, actually, so I don't think he'd quite like your line of questioning, because I am only 18.
We aren't asking your daddy, though, and he's not here now.
No, but he will be very shortly, and your time is up on me. On the cross-examination. Do you have, at this stage, any estimate who might have committed this appalling crime?
It might appear, I say that very cautiously, that there is some sort of professional reason for this, but seeing as how you've written it, I think that how it might appear probably is wrong.
Oh, I'm deeply flattered, thank you.
I'm very suspicious of Tara Brinkley French with a hyphen, because mm-hmm. the hyphenated French only has one F.
Yes.
And in my experience of the genuine upper classes, that should have two letter Fs, really, mm-hmm. in French.
Well,
so I think she may be not quite what she appears to be.
Yes, very interesting that. I've just heard from Inspector Sergeant of our police liaison service that some new evidence has emerged. Yes, we're going to go straight over to a press conference being held by Professor Hermann Gross from the Archaeology Department of the University of Vienna.
I have been consulted in this case by the British police because I am the world expert on Earl Egwith of Wolsby. I have been examining the jeweled cross found in the Studdingham grave, and although my findings have not yet been confirmed in the laboratory, I have no doubt in stating that the artifact is of a later date than so far assumed. From the distinctive setting of the stones, it looks to me like a Northumbrian work of the mid-7th century. I will stake my reputation that the cross was not made until at least 50 years after the death of Egfrith of Wolsby. What follows from this, of course, is that the cross must have been placed in the grave sometime between about the year 650 AD and the present day. Though, my instinct favors an extremely recent date. And my instinct also tells me there is a nasty stench of archaeological malpractice hanging over this whole affair.
Well, thank you, Professor Gross. Well, that is a turn-up, nicht wahr? So, armed with that new information, Val and Lindsay, you may recall our witnesses and address one question to each of them, and then you'll have to commit yourselves to who you think done it. OK, Lindsay, you start this time. To which witness do you wish to address your first question?
I'll have Tara back, please.
Hello.
Hello, Tara. Tara, we have just heard from a Professor Gross about the cross that we have been discussing.
Yeah.
Has your father ever said to you, "Oh, Tara, what a lovely Northumbrian 7th century cross I have just managed to acquire"?
What do you think?
I think you're going to say no.
No, afraid not. Normally, what's your Barclay card bill this month, Tara? That's the sort of thing that Daddy says to me.
Right.
That's what makes him cross.
Well,
thank you very much.
Would you like to address a question to Miss Brinkley French, Val?
Yes, I'd like to ask her how well she knows Dr. Valerie Morgan.
I don't know her at all, really. She's just one of the archaeologists, one of the proper people, you know. Very
right.
Dry.
Very dry. Who would you like to call next?
Kevin Schultz.
Kevin Malpas.
If you were able to show that Professor Sturton's work was all completely misplaced and that you had known the correct, what should we say, orientation, that's the wrong word probably, isn't it?
Keep going, you're doing really well.
The correct historical place of the famous Egfrith of Woldsby, would it have done you a lot of good?
Well, it's a pretty hot subject in the archaeological world, let me tell you. Certainly it would have done me a lot of good, but it's something I'm going to prove anyway. I'm completely confident of that, but I'm not deterred in any way. I'm heading for the top of the archaeological pyramid, as it were, and there's nothing going to stop me from getting there, you know what I mean?
Yes, thank you.
Val, do you have a question you wish to address to Dr. Malpas?
Did you plant the cross in the burial chamber? And did you get those shorts from Harvey Nichols?
Absolutely not. And yes, do you like them?
I think they're terrific.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Morgan, would you mind coming forward?
Dr. Morgan, you worked for a very long time with Professor Sturton. Do you happen to know the terms of his will?
No, you see, we are professional colleagues, that's all. I didn't really know anything about his private life.
Thank you. Lindsay.
Dr. Morgan, you told us quite a lot about Dr. Malpas and the young girls on the site, but one thing we didn't ask you was, did Professor Sturton have any interest in these young girls?
I don't think so, no. He was married to his work, as I said.
I'd like to ask you what that's supposed to mean.
Well, he didn't have time for things like that. He wasn't interested in those young girls.
He was asexual?
Sorry, no, that is a supplementary question.
That's a clarification at the same point.
Yes. He certainly is now, anyway.
Well, now it's time for our guest investigators to commit themselves to which of our three suspects they believe perpetrated this appalling death by umbrella. OK, Val and Lindsay, let's hear what you think.
I'm going to go for Tara, because I don't think she told us the truth, and we weren't allowed to ask her enough questions to screw the truth out of her properly.
Are you suggesting I was overprotective to her?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because she's so slony and young, and you fancy her, obviously.
Well, she... I mean, she is quite pretty, you have to... Well, no, I mean... But, Val, are you of one mind with your co-investigator?
On the basis that one should consider the least likely suspect, I think it could be Dr. Valerie Morgan, though I'd have to be sort of grasping rather at motive.
Give us a ridiculous idea.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, she could secretly be having a love affair with Tara Brinkley French and trying to discredit Professor Sturton so that she could get his chair when he's sacked for falsifying the burial chamber.
Mm, well, very interesting. Very interesting indeed. All is about to be revealed. Yes, we are going to hear what actually happened that fateful night in our foul play... Foul playlet. Off you go, Leah Maria. The scene is one of the Studdingham site's porter cabins, at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. That's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's true what they say about older men as lovers, isn't it? If ever a girl earned her post-coital ciggy, I...
Don't you dare light one of those while I'm around. It's a filthy habit.
Oh, sorry, Kevin.
Well, you better go. Out the back way, through the trench, then nobody will see you.
Oh, stuff that. I'm going out the front way. I don't care who sees me. Kevin, do you love me at all?
God, no.
Phew, that's a relief. Let's just keep it physical, eh, Tiger?
Oh, no. Yeah, nothing goes like a posh, Sheila. Oh, no, no. Yeah, what are you doing here, Professor?
I came in here to fetch something. Then I heard you creep in the back way and that girl round the front. And you're an animal, Malpass. You're old enough to be her father.
Yeah, but sadly not rich enough. Anyway, what's your problem, Harold? Are you jealous?
Jealous? Of what you and that girl were doing? Certainly not.
Yeah, I've often wondered what you do for sex. Presumably you like nothing better than curling up in bed with a Saxon oil lamp and a dirty illuminated manuscript.
Don't be disgusting, Malpass. I'm going to check the security round the excavation.
Sure you're not going to remove from the grave any evidence that Egfrith of Waldsby was a Christian?
Certain, Malpass. You mustn't judge everyone by your own standards.
What are you doing here?
I was just keeping an eye on the excavation. I'm worried that someone might try to sabotage it.
What do you mean?
I've been watching Dr. Malpass. He's up to no good, you know. I think he's planning to plant some sort of Christian artifact in the tomb, you know, to support his bloody theory.
Yes, it would be in character, oh, wouldn't it? If one was found in there, no one would doubt it was his doing, would they?
What do you mean, Harold? What's the joke?
This is the joke.
A jewelled cross.
And I'm going to plant it in the grave. Malpass will instantly claim it as proof of his theory. But when it's found to be at least 50 years too recent, then everyone's going to think that he planted the thing. And his career will be ruined.
Harold, you wouldn't stoop so
low. Oh, if you're going to beat a rotter like Malpass, you have to start behaving like he does.
Behaving like he does? With girls?
Hmm?
You always told me you weren't interested in women, Harold. When I told you what I felt about you, you insisted that you didn't have those kind of feelings, that we should just continue as friends and colleagues. I've always accepted that, Harold. Until tonight.
Valerie, what on earth are you talking about?
I saw you, Harold. I saw you go into the porter cabin. Then I saw that girl go in. I could hear what was happening in there, Harold.
No, you mustn't start spreading rumours like that, Valerie. It would ruin my reputation.
Oh, don't worry, Harold. I'm going to ensure your reputation stays intact forever.
Valerie, don't be stupid. You've got the wrong end of the stick.
Maybe. But I've got the right end of the umbrella.
No! No!
I love you, Harold, but you must die!
Thank you very much, Leah and Maria. Oscars all round, I would say. Val, you were right.
For the wrong reasons.
Well, for the wrong reasons, but, you know, it's nice to be right, isn't it? Even if for the wrong reasons. Lindsay, I'm sorry, you were wrong. Though, in a sense, for the right reasons.
Thank you, Simon. That makes me feel a lot better.
It is mildly comforting. That is it for this week's Foul Play. My thanks go to our cast of thousands, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. And thanks also to our bold and incorruptible sleuths, the guest investigators, Lindsay Davis and Val McDermid.
Foul Play was devised and written by the chairman, Simon Brett. The producer was Anne Jobson.